What's up, everyone? I'm Bianca Torres with Apartment 5H. Self left me here today, but that's okay because I'm gonna hold it down. And today we have a special guest. Monteezy's in the building.
Teezy, baby. What's good, y'all? Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm a huge fan of this platform.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you guys for having me on. And let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun today. First, it's the day after the Grammys. Mm-hmm. Did you watch?
I did. I watched majority.
Okay. I did not. So okay. Don't feel so bad.
Got you.
Okay. Safe place.
Got you. So, first of all, Kendrick sweeped everything.
Yeah, I saw.
You know, and I was sitting here thinking, because I was talking to a lot of my homies about this. I'm like, what's about to happen is he's about to go up there and actually get the celebration for this song and the clean seat. As soon as I heard that record during the beef, I'm like, oh God. It was not like us took off. I'm like, yeah, he's gonna clean sweep this. I felt like he was gonna clean sweep it. And then the Grammys, I felt like they was just gonna get they're gonna give him the awards, and the same thing I predicted happened. The thing I predicted happened. I don't it's gonna be hard for Drake, man.
I don't think it will be. I think that, I mean, obviously, what needs to happen now is the Super Bowl needs to happen. And after that, people are going to forget. It'll be, like, in the back of your head, but it's not going to be. Drake will be fine. We've seen people come back from worse.
Yes. I do think, in my opinion, mm-hmm. I think the one thing he has to do, which he hasn't done, is he has to make people miss him a little bit. And that, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. If he sits back and he kind of just strategizes a way to make people miss him a bit, come with a new strategy, and then come with an album maybe 6 months from now or mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. come with a marketing plan, and then come back. And his perspective, the perspective and the vision of him and how people perceive him will kind of change. But if he just continues, the music won't hit the same, you know? Doesn't mean he has mm-hmm. to totally stop, but I do think that he has to re-strategize how he approaches it now. Because, you know, everybody brings up Nas, everybody brings up Jay-Z. Yeah. Everybody brings those times up, but it was a different time back then. It was a whole different time and strategy mm-hmm. and how things move. Now you got the internet and the way the industry has changed over these years. I think that the best thing for him to do, if I'm Drake, is I sit back for a minute, I chill, I let just the ride go for a bit. Then I come back with a different approach. Maybe he has to do the Prince thing. You know, every year Prince changed his look. You know what I mean?
He's already doing that now anyway.
Absolutely. So, you know what I mean? Changed his look, changed something. Every album Prince came out with, he always changed something. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And it made people just kind of forget what he did on the last thing to what he's working on new. So I think that's what he should do. I do think, though, the Grammys, it's good to see representation. It's good to see Beyonce finally won an award.
Yeah, she finally won a Grammy. She finally did. For her country album.
And my boy Breezy, he's long overdue.
Absolutely, I agree. You know what I mean? I agree.
My favorite one of the GOATs. He's definitely deserved more Grammys than he's gotten. But, you know, to see him finally get his flowers.
Definitely.
You know, the categories was crazy. There was a lot of talent in them categories.
There was. I'll say that. I missed it, but this is a Grammy I think I wish I would have seen live. Because a lot of the times it's like they don't have as many hip-hop performances as I would like sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this year they made sure. I don't know if it was the Kendrick thing because now everyone is like a Kendrick Lamar fan. So maybe it was that. Let's be honest here.
Okay, this is good dialogue. Let's have this conversation. You think mm-hmm. that a lot of people are just hopping on the wagon because of the beef, or you think that...
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Yes, yes, and yes. Because I guarantee you 75% of these people that are chanting for Kendrick were at La Marina, some type of tiki bar in 2016, listening to One Dance, and it was a vibe, and loved Drake. So, come on.
I believe that to be the case on people loving
hopping
him
out their
from
vehicles.
The,
you know what I
right,
mean?
Right, right, right.
Where he had that challenge, like risking their life. Like,
I do think now to add to that, I do think that Kendrick has a very loyal fan base.
Yes, he does.
And, you know, when you're at that level, you have a very, very solidified and loyal fan base. I do think that maybe 20% of the people are just riding the wave. Now I know that because my kids, my son's 13 and my daughter is 9, and they're singing the clean version of that record, and they know the whole song. And I'm like, this record and this beef has gone universal, that my 12-year-old son is keeping up with me on the beat. Like, did you hear this? Did you hear that? And I'm like, this kid is 12, and he knows about this.
Yeah, I mean, it was played at graduations last summer. Like,
so I think, I do think that a percentage of the people obviously hop on the way because everybody just wants to be around success. That's just kind of the way it goes. Everybody just wants to be around who's successful.
But they love to hate someone who they've seen succeed for so long consistently.
So do you, now that's very true.
It's hate also.
Now I've experienced that. But do you think that, so on your end, you think that the perspective of saying, hey, he might have lost the war, but eventually over time, people will forget about it and he'll be able to recover?
I'm not going to say they're going to forget about it, but it won't be as important because we live in a society where it's like,
okay,
you'll get crucified for doing something. All you got to do is do something that people like. Whether it's a certain fit, whether it's a song, whether it's a money move. And people are like, you know, that did happen, but he's doing this now and that shit is hot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, it's a very bandwagon society.
Yes, and I believe that this society, industry, I believe a lot of it is very bandwagon mm-hmm. in the sense of that. I do think...
Not even just the industry, people in general.
People always... People never wants to be around the person that is going through the downside or a bad time. Everybody just wants to be around and attached to who's successful and who's always mm-hmm. who always has the wave riders. Everybody wants to be around that. And I do think one thing I will say on Drake's defense on his side, I do think that he's been at the top for so long that people were waiting for a reason. To find a reason to say, okay, we need to bring him down a peg, mm-hmm. you know? And I do think that him engaging in the beef with Kendrick and him being out-strategized gave people that direct reason that they wanted.
Of course.
You know? And I think that mm-hmm. In return as well, I think Kendrick had a great strategy by not giving Drake a lot to work with. Even if what was true and what was not, we don't know. But I do know that the way Kendrick keeps his mystique in the sense of his brand, you know, if you're engaging in war, you have to try to find out as much as you can. So mm-hmm. in closing of that, or my point of saying that is that I think that Drake has to take some time. Like I saw the clip come out with Party Next Door and people are crapping on it. Like the clip that came out today mm-hmm. with Party Next Door, like that.
Because we're still in the thick of it, right? Like, I'm not gonna lie, this is a long lasting beef. Right? Like, I think in the previous years where we've seen, we talk about it here all the time, the Jay-Z versus Nas, the Beanie versus Jadakiss.
Right.
I don't feel, and I guess it's because also technology, right? We're watching this beef every day versus back in the days, you would hear a diss track, this person would reply, it would probably last maybe 6 months. And then also it's not in your face, it's just whenever you can catch someone throwing out a song, it's not like everything they do, you're watching and people are talking shit in the comments. Like, it wasn't like that before. So I Absolutely. Feel like this has been dragged out. And what dragged it out even more was that he's doing the Super Bowl. So a beef that it could have really just been shut down since September, it just prolonged it.
So here's my thing.
And then obviously the Grammys, you know?
Here's my point about bad strategy. Why put that clip in that video out now? Let it just die down.
Yeah, I agree.
Let him do the Super Bowl, just disappear for a bit. Then you and Party, after this is all over and he gets his Super Bowl performance where everybody isn't talking about it as much, then you drop this song and you know what I mean? You let it just give him a few more weeks.
But then it's gonna be seen as a retreat. And this is where egos come in. It's ego.
Now
it's
you're
ego.
Talking. Now
it's
you're ego. Talking. It is ego. Because now if he doesn't drop anything, it's like, oh, man, he ran away. He's not doing anything anymore.
This is what I'm saying. He's in hiding. You haven't seen him post anything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The guy can't win.
You can't win. You can't win for losing in this. And I think that I do think, even though I go more with the other side, I do think that for him, it's kind of like, well, in his mind, it's like, well, nothing's stopping this. I'm gonna keep going. I'm gonna keep putting out music, and eventually they gonna, you know, my now Drake is at a stage now that all artists go through in their careers, and it's a very tough transition for a lot of us to go through. Is when you kind of out your fan base grew up with you. So when he came out in 2009, 2010, 2011 in his peak, his fans were still in college, young right. kids. And now these guys and women have kids, families, and they're our age, like late 30s. They're like in that age, around his age group. So now he has to find a way to be able to understand that, okay, there's a chink in my armor with this battle, that public perception. Now, how am I going to be able to grow with my fan base? How am I going to be able to grow with my fan base? What am I going to talk about now that I can grow with the people and grow with my fan base? You know what I mean? And it happens like that as artists, because you get to the point where you're not the new car smell anymore.
Right.
You're not the new person. New people are the young guys that are coming up. So now, are you going to try to do things to keep up with them and, you know, keep up with that energy? Or are you going to do what's like, J. Cole does a great job at this, just rapping for his core people, his core fan base. And maybe this collaboration with Party Next Door is going to be that.
I think Drake has already faced that, though, because you see, he's already done that, because you see, for All the Dogs, even like painting his fingernails, like he's already like made that decision to try to, you know, get with the newer demographic. I think he's done a good job of doing both, actually.
Okay.
I think he's done a good job with maintaining his rapport with his day one, you know, because he still comes out with similar tracks, like similar
the
music.
Like Timestamps, the 6 a.m. Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But he still knows how to appeal to the younger audience. I think he's already made that decision. I think right now he needs to win them back. It's not even about, like, which direction do I go in order to either keep my old fans or gain new ones. Right now he has to get both fan bases back.
And you know how you
do that? That's a little hard.
And you know how you do that?
How?
You have to become a person of the community, and you have to kind of lower down off your high ranking and become one of the people again. That's the way I think you build it back. And not saying that you have to, you know, not do good business or there's a way he can do it to where he can keep his brand up, but he has to win the court of public opinion back. And right. sometimes you have to be of the community. He has to do things of the community. He has to just show that he's a human again. Nowadays, you know, it, like we see even as artists nowadays, the artists that we really, really like and listen to, we like them as people. You know, it's not just putting out an album anymore and just saying, hey, these are my 15 songs, and then you can just disappear. Now you have to be one with the community. The Kendricks,
mm-hmm.
and the way that Kendricks and Cole do things nowadays is very rare. You know what I mean? There's very few that can do that, drop their music,
right.
keep
right.
their mystique, and be gone, like Michael Jackson and all those guys used to do back in the day. Now you have to be one with the community. Now we say, okay, we build you up. We built Drake up. Now we see something where they're trying to bring him down. You know how that goes with success, like you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that success. Hey, you at this level. Okay, you took this L. Everybody's pointing at him saying he lost. Now the way I think he does come back, if he does try to, is try to do things to bring more of the community together with him as an artist, become more of a, not say people person, but to do things to show that he's a human being.
I don't think that can help him either. I think that would, in a usual circumstance, yes. But I think that people are just gung-ho on like continuing to hate him. I think if he does that now, he's going to be seen as a fake, as a fraud. Now you want to do that? You weren't doing that before, but you get beat by Kendrick and now you're doing all this nice stuff?
Mm.
He can't even do that. It has to be something way more sinister, way more like strategic, and it has to feel real. To your point, it does have to be a real connection.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think him doing like the usual charity work, being with the people, I don't think it's that easy. I think it's definitely that strategy, you know, being one with the people, but how, it has to feel genuine. And that's what he has to be very careful with.
And that's what he has to find out.
Because that's what he's been called out for.
Yes.
That's why people aren't fucking with him. So it's like, what is it can he do to be seen as genuine again?
That is the overall thing that he's going to have to do the soul searching to figure out.
Right.
That one piece that he's missing. If he finds that piece, He can recover, but he just has to find that piece because he got so successful. And like they always say, sometimes you get so successful that you can become unrelatable to the people.
Correct, yeah.
Because nobody, like, after a while, likes to be around the person or watch the person that they feel like they can't reach.
Yeah, you're so far removed from reality.
Right, exactly. So he reached that point. So now he has to find that thing. I don't know what it is, but he has to, if he is going to recover and get his comeback, he's going to have to find something to say, okay, it's like life. We built you up, we're tearing you down. Now, how are you going to build yourself back up to the public opinion and musically to where people my age, older than him, the women, the younger demographics say, okay, he's back. He just got to find that. I don't know what that is.
I think you have a point, though. I think it's going to be some soul searching.
He's going to have to do some soul
searching. He's going to have to do some soul searching.
He's going to have to look in the mirror and just say, okay, this is what it is. Get, you know, hey, if you think I lost, okay, I lost. Cool. Now, how can I come back? And the only way he's going to be doing that now, in my opinion, is some way find a place to become more relatable.
Yeah.
And where people can understand it. Like, okay, I see what he's trying to do. I can relate to that. You know what I mean? Yeah, and so he doesn't feel like he's so out of touch with what's going on. Because right now, I think he's kind of fighting. It's like what they say, the five stages of grieving. I think he's not at the acceptance stage yet.
Correct.
He's not there yet.
You're right. He has to.
He's still fighting it. He's still fighting the and you know, you go through that. You know what I mean?
It's hard. If I was him, it would take me a while to admit that too. Like, given his, you know, streak and, you know, his career, like, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. It's like if Floyd Mayweather took his first loss in boxing, it would, you know, especially if he marketed everything around that.
Right.
That'd be tough. But you have to do it.
Yeah.
It's tough. You know what I mean? And I think that I don't know who his entourage is. I don't know anybody around it, but somebody needs to be in his ear like, yo, bro, I understand, but I think you just need to find that soul searching and find
just
that.
Just chill out.
And just find that, whatever that it is, find it.
Right.
And then he can try to do it. But if he doesn't and he keeps fighting and everybody's in his ear, like, you need to drop five more songs on him and you need to do this and do that, it's he's going to fight with his spirit.
I heard Charlamagne on The Breakfast Club earlier today, too. He was saying that, you know, he was talking about Kendrick's wins, obviously SZA's wins, Doechii's wins. So, you know, Top Dawg won really big at the Grammys this year. And he was saying that he feels that Top Dawg is the greatest to ever do it. Now, I don't agree. I think that, I mean, I'm happy for Top Dawg's success because they've been at it for a long time. And that is like the definition of like getting it from the mud. Like, I don't want to take that away from them. But I think also we're living in like a streaming era. So I feel like it's a little easier in that respect.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of feel like he mentioned Top Dawg and he mentioned another label, but he didn't mention, I think, Cash Money. Could be like one of the top three even.
Yeah. I think if you really break it down, in my opinion, I think Cash Money got it. That's just my opinion. I think that
they brought the megastars.
Barring with everything legally that Birdman and Wayne went through. I'm just talking about Birdman putting people on. You know what I mean? Him and Manny Fresh. Manny Fresh,
right.
Turk, Lil Wayne, Juvie, BG, Drake, Wayne, you name it. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
I mean, just from that tree, I don't think... Also, too, I have to say that, too, in that Cash Money thing, because Wayne did something that many people don't do. He brought up another star that surpassed him, success-wise, and he didn't show no envy of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? That says a lot.
And his ego did not get in the way, that's for sure.
And I think you deserve more points, in my opinion.
Yeah, he doesn't get enough credit for that.
I think you deserve more points, in my opinion, when you're an artist and you can do that. Birdman's an artist. So when you can do that and be an artist and not hog up all the shine, I think it's great. I think Top Dawg has done a great job with the way they do things. Mm-hmm. I think they do a phenomenal job. I think they're in the top five conversation, but as far as like success and what I grew up on and what I know, that's Cash Money, man.
Yeah, I think so,
It's Cash Money. Like, Juvie, people wasn't around when Juvie, like, you youngins wasn't around when Juvie was the man.
I mean,
he was competing with DMX and all them. Like, he was out there.
I mean, and then don't get me started with Rockefeller. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. I think that was a not a weird statement. I mean, if that's how he feels, that's how he feels. But
I always give credit to the executives that are artists themselves, but are willing to take a step back, because it's not always an easy thing for them to do. They see the bigger picture outside of themselves, mm-hmm. you know? I think for a guy like Top Dog, I think with him falling back from not being an artist and him seeing it, he's been able to be a great director and understand an artist from that side of things. Him, Punch, salute to you guys. But I think that in the sense of being an artist and being able to do it, I just give more points for that, because that's difficult. And it's just a mental thing to say, hey, I'm going to put these people on. I'm going to make these hit records. Hey, Juvie, we going to get in the studio. We're going to do a Hot Boys album. Mm-hmm. Wayne, that's the one. We're going to put the machine behind him. Mm-hmm. And then Wayne becomes that person. And then Wayne puts on the person who becomes the next person. I think that's golden.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was basing it off of Grammys. I just think that it's a little easier as a label now to have multiple artists considered for Grammys versus back then, because again, I think the streaming era just ushered in so many new rules and opportunities specifically for hip hop. You know what I mean? Because if you think about it, like, you don't really, back in the days, of course, I'm not gonna say how long, but you know, like, we didn't have like bootlegs of like pop CDs. Like, you know, a lot of the times, like the black market, quote unquote, like, yeah. It was always like mixtapes. It was like rap music. Like, if you go especially to like the Jamaica Ave, Fordham Road, like, we had a lot of like bootlegs, because that's just the culture, right? Like, we try to get our music elsewhere. That way we don't have to spend the full price of $20 for a CD back in those days. You
absolutely,
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I think that carries into like streaming culture too, right? Because it's, again, it's not like your typical like traditional sale. You're streaming. So I think that because all of a sudden, I think Grammy started considering streaming in 2016.
2016, 17.
Because Chance the Rapper was the first rapper, I believe, to be considered for a Grammy based on streaming.
Right.
So I say that to say that I think now, present time, it's easier for labels to have multiple artists considered for Grammy Awards versus back then, because we didn't have that opportunity as far as exposure to the Grammy audience. You know?
And I think that too, and I always say this, Bianca, I always say this. It was a different feeling. Guys, I'm 37 years old. So I was at the, like, I was at the CD era, and I'm like into the streaming era. So with me saying that, it was a different feeling though, when you had to get up, go to the store, get the album, look in the CD jacket,
right,
see who directed it, see who produced it. It's a different feeling. Now I feel like you said, it's just the entry level and how they do it with the streaming and stuff is different. We consume music back then is different. So when so-and-so won a Grammy in 2000, it was different.
Yeah,
it was earned, man.
Really, really. I mean, still earned today, but it was just a difference, because it was a different type of effort to have to go and get the music and purchase it. And it's a different effort. Now it's like everything with the tip of your fingers.
Tip of a finger. I kind of missed that era. I missed that era more. You know, I'm not trying to act like the old man on the lawn, but I just missed that era more. And so when I was watching the Grammys and things back then, back in the days, you just had a different connection to the artist. Yeah. You know, me as an artist myself, I just try to find those ways to keep that connection. And now,
well, that goes back to Mystique now, probably, right? Because back then we didn't have social media, so that's the Mystique factor.
Yeah, that's the Mystique. And sometimes we were streaming in the way we are with social media as artists and stuff like that. It's kind of harder. It's tougher. You know, it's tougher to try to maintain that mystique while still being able to stay relevant out here. It's like I tell people all the time, you're just always competing with the scroll.
Right.
There's so much content and so much stuff that as an artist, when you do break through the threshold and make it to those Grammys and are successful and being able to maintain, like a Chris Brown, to go from the CD era to here, or Drake from the CD era to here, to those people to still be relevant in the time like this, it's tough, man. You got to salute it. You got to salute that.
Well, speaking of content, we had such a good conversation. We did not get into who you are exactly, for
absolutely
those that don't know. So, Montezy.
Yes.
You do multiple things.
Yes, ma'am.
So you write the theme song for some of the biggest wrestlers' theme music.
Yes, I do.
You are an artist and you have a podcast.
Yes,
so
I do.
One thing at a time. I definitely want to dip into the wrestling. Now, I don't know much of the new crap, but as a child, I grew up really appreciating wrestling. So
yes, ma'am.
So how did you start making music? It was for the AEW and the WWE, right?
So to give you the history,
okay, I
made a song about, it wasn't for him at the time, but I made a song about the wrestler Roman Reigns, who is the top guy in WWE right now. So it was a random song that I made for him in the house, in my house, watching. There's a thing called the WWE Network, a subscription-based thing on WWE, and my son was 2 at the time. So I'm holding him, and I'm like, and I'm watching a match, Roman Reigns match, that he just comes. I said, you know what? I'm just going to randomly write a song about this dude. It was no game plan.
And was he one of, like, your favorite wrestlers?
He was up and coming, so I didn't really... I knew who he was, but I didn't, like... I didn't have, like... He was just getting his foot in.
Okay.
So I was like, he had potential on who he was. So I randomly wrote the song in 2014. And it, you know, this is before viral was viral.
Right.
I want to date myself. But it was viral... You know what I mean? Before viral was viral. And it started going around. I started getting hit up by a whole bunch of people on social media. And I'm like, how can I build on this momentum? So, and I will say this to artists out there. You have to learn a way to become your own sync license. You have to learn a way to do that in your own way. If you live in Miami... and you're a fan of the Miami Heat, make a Dwayne Wade song. Make a Jimmy Butler song. Make a Pat Riley song. You never know where it's going to go.
That's true.
But you're able to create your own opportunities by doing it. So that's what I did. I said, I made this song and started being successful. I'm like, you know what? Let me not go just strictly to the WWE route. Because that's what people are naturally going to do. Which is fine. I did it the old school way. There were small local promotions in Florida, and I started in Maryland. Shout out to Drolix and MCW in Maryland. Shout out to those guys. Dan McDevitt, that gave me my first opportunity. I will always give them a shout out. I said, I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm going to start from the underground and work my way up. Because if I do that, I have a better relationship with everybody. And in wrestling, you got to show you a fan. You can't just come in and think, oh, I'm just going to be in the wrestling community. They take that serious.
I'm sure that I've seen.
Right. So you got to be in it. So
wrestling fans are crazy.
So I traveled to Maryland. I went to West Virginia. I went to Florida. I went up here to New York, and I literally just made songs for anyone who wanted one. Anyone.
Okay.
For 3-4 years, I didn't even charge a dime. I said, I'm just going to make songs for you. I'll make a song. You an up-and-coming wrestler? Cool, I'll make a song for you. I'm in the studio like Lil Wayne dropping 5 songs in an hour.
And it's important for wrestlers to have like a theme song, right?
That is a distinct part of their identity. I say, if like it's like 33, 33, 33. 33% of each. A good wrestler, along with a good talker, and a good song that is recognizable when people, you got to make something to where people can react. Where if they know that first string or that first drum or they hear your voice, they either know who made it or they find a way to get attached to it.
Okay.
So what I did was I said, I'm a corner of the market. So I literally, from 2014 to, I'm not even going to count to now, but to like before I got to the WWE with Swerve, I recorded about 400 theme songs.
Damn.
400. And this is everybody on the come up. Everybody on the come up. Up and coming wrestlers. Maryland, West Virginia, California, you name it. And wrestlers, you know how the industry go, everybody talk. Oh, he does theme songs. He does a song. He'll make a song for you. So at the time, I'm getting 10, 15 orders in a week.
Was there a wrestler that you started with that was up and coming, but then all of a sudden, like, blew up? So it was kind of like you were, like, there day one?
Swerve.
Okay. Okay. So you're his day one wrestling theme music maker.
I was. Yeah, at the beginning. Yep, I was. That's dope. That was, we met in 2015. Okay. We started working together in 2017 doing the Sword City podcast. I made one of his theme songs in 2017. He was on the come up. I was on the come up musically. He was on the come up as a wrestler. So it's funny now seeing how we've both excelled, and him being the top star in AEW and me being one of the top guys in wrestling music. That was the person where really we grew together.
That's dope.
We grew together. That was my introduction to the lane. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to take this and branch it outside of wrestling. So I've done XFL. I did some behind the scenes writing for some wrestlers for WWE. Like if some of the wrestlers like did like rap gimmicks or something, mm-hmm. I would like write some of the stuff for them.
Who was the biggest wrestler you worked with so far?
Okay, I'm not even going to say so because that's my direct connection. So I've made music for, there's a wrestler in AEW right now called Sammy Guevara.
He's pretty big.
Yeah, a wrestler in AEW.
No, I'm just joking.
There's Sammy Guevara. There's Shane Taylor right now who's on AEW. So I've made music for a lot of the top upper echelon people.
And you're walking him out on a fight, at a fight in April, right? Shane Taylor?
Rashad Evans.
Oh, Rashad Evans. Okay.
Rashad Evans.
Okay,
so, you know, I definitely would love to make this announcement here that the announcement just came out that Rashad Evans is fighting Rampage Jackson in a boxing fight. It will be announced soon, the exact date, but it will be happening. And they just signed the contract, and I just made the music for Rashad.
Congratulations.
So that's, honestly, that is the biggest placement of my career.
That is so, congratulations, that's dope.
You know what I mean? Biggest placement of my career being February 27th, a couple weeks from now, will be 11 years I've been doing it.
So wait, so you also do theme music for boxers too?
Anybody. Boxers, local businesses. Movies.
Oh, you do? So you do jingles too?
Yeah, like, it's not just wrestling is what people know me for, but I do it for everything.
Oh.
Yeah, I did it for the XFL, for the Rock's XFL company when they just brought the XFL back. I did it for the Orlando Guardians football team.
Okay.
I did one for, his name was Ryan Reeves for, he's a hockey player. He plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs, I read right now. And I made one for him. And his independent company. So I've made music for a bunch of people, even outside of wrestling. But that's the thing that I always tell people is you have to become the sync placement yourself. If you go in and do the work, these opportunities are gonna pull up. You know, you go in and you lay as many references as you can. Doors are gonna open. Hey, oh, I got a song about this. Like, there's not one wrestler on TV right now, when I see them, I ain't got like a couple lines in my head. I'm just ingrained in it now.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's like second nature now.
It's like second nature, but that's how it builds. That's how it comes together. So I've been blessed to have this opportunity with Rashad. And thank you, Rashad, because UFC Hall of Famer, one of the biggest mixed martial arts fighters of all time, and my personal trainer getting me back in shape. This belly going down, y'all. Next time you see me, I'm going to be right.
He's really helping you out?
He really is.
He's training me.
He trains me. He gives me a lot of advice. He gives me a lot of vitamin advice. Hey, take these vitamins, eat this, take that.
What's the best advice he's given you?
Great question.
It could be health. It could be life.
The greatest advice he gave me in the time that I've known him is he stripped down his ego. Mm. If you see him, if you watch any UFC fight of Rashad back in the day, he was very egotistical. And, you know, you kind of have to be that way to be in mixed martial arts because, you know, but you also have to be very disciplined as well. He was kind of known as very cocky. But now if you talk to him, he's like total opposite. He's very calm, very quiet. And I learned so much. I said, bro, how did you strip your ego being at such a high level and being able to not only maintain your family, but also leave the spotlight, because he just left it. He retired, and then he's like, I just wanted to be a normal person. Mm. He's like, people respect me for who I am, and I do great business on being who I am, but I also wanted to remain very approachable. That there was a time where he felt like he wasn't very approachable, mm. and he stripped all that down. So learning from him and not only having this placement from a UFC legend, but being able to have that direct relationship with somebody, because I told him, when me and Swerve interviewed him on the Swerve City podcast, I said this. I said there was five people that I wanted to meet. And they always say, don't meet your heroes. But I ended up meeting a couple of them. So It was Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, Allen Iverson, who I still want to meet, and Rashad Evans.
Oh, okay.
So when I got a chance to meet him and to know that this man's now a mentor of mine, a big bro of mine, means the world to me. You know what I mean?
It's a full circle moment.
It's a full circle moment, and it shows that the hard work has been put in, but also to develop a friendship to show that it is possible. So I'm excited for the fight. I'm going to be there, hopefully walking him down to the ring and live on pay-per-view, and I'm ecstatic, man, for me 11 years in and to have this opportunity. I just set him the record. He's like, it's a go. I said, God is good.
Well, amen. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the ego thing is important in any business, because a lot of the times it'll fuck up what you have going on.
It will. You know? It will. I've seen
egos
it.
Egos and taking things personal.
I've seen it so many times where things can be going so well.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it could be outside sources, whether it could just be you or whatever, ends up messing up a lot, you know? And I just never believed that. Like, so it comes to a lot of conversations happen, like, with me and Swerve, because, you know, Swerve's a musician. So, and I taught him how to rap.
That's right. You taught him how to rap.
Yeah, I brought him into music, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I have the great balance of being a student and a coach at the same time.
Well, how did that happen, though? Like, how did that whole situation come about?
Well, so me and him were already doing the podcast together. We were doing the Swerve City podcast together. So one day, this is just random. We're at a booking, doing a live podcast in Tennessee. I just randomly look at him. I said, bro, you can rap, bro. And he's like, huh? I said, bro, I really believe you could do this. Something in my spirit has had to tell me to tell him, you need to get into the studio someday. And we need to just try it and just see what happens. And he was like, I don't know, man. You know what I mean? I never done it. I never thought. I said, bro, just trust me. Just try it. Just get in the studio and just record. See what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Just any idea you have on the plate, go ahead. Now, the thing that I did, I didn't sign him to no contracts. I didn't hold him to anything. I didn't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He gave me an opportunity by bringing me up in the wrestling business to who I am. I'm going to do right by him when he wants to do music and do right by him in the music industry. So one day we're in the studio. Shout out to my man, Shawty T, out there in St. Pete, my main engineer. That's who we go to record. And we just started recording. He had to learn the voice inflections, how to do things, how to say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Understanding what a hook and a verse and all that stuff is. So we did that together. And I coached him through from the very first song to where he is now, 4-5 years rapping now in his career as a mentor. And now I work with him not only as his A&R director, but working with him in the sense of bringing his career, helping him with, like, you know, registering music, licensing, okay, teaching him, you know what I mean, handling that stuff for him while he could just focus on the wrestling part of things. So I've had the blessing to be able to do both.
Yeah.
And to be able to have a good story about it, because when he excels, that makes me happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, if he wins, you win.
Like, if it's funny because I always look at it in the sense of like a karate flick, right? Or mixed martial arts. If you go see the dojo master, eventually you learn, you get your belt, and then you go and do your own thing. You know? But mm-hmm. you teach them in the sense of, okay, this is what you do, and then you get to a certain level where you max out and you learn, and then you go have other experiences. But I'm still here for him. I still work with him each and every day. We work together each and every day. And watching, I feel good to say that I have my own successful career, but I also have somebody I mentor that's having their own. And we still, and we still tight.
That's dope.
Says a lot. Says a lot. I saw a lot of stuff go bad over these years, and I didn't want that for him. I didn't want that for me. So when we first started working together, and I tell that with anybody I work with, I tell them, let's just not, especially with other men, I say, let's not let ego, money, or women tear this up. Please.
Yeah.
If we have to have the tough conversations, let's just air it out. We ain't got to like what each other's saying, but let's just make sure that we're good. We don't, like they say, in a relationship with your lady or your man, don't go to bed mad.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with friendships, though, bro. I love you. I love you too, bro. All right, let's hash it out and, you know, and get through it. Like,
and
me and him,
fun,
we've never had an argument because we just have an understanding. But it's like, I implore that with people. Relationships in not only this industry, but with each other. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just don't let those things, in your case, maybe men, your ego, money, and men. You know, but it's hard because you're dealing with different personalities.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the men thing is not so hard. I don't really have, you know, everything is separate. So I don't have that problem.
Got you.
But the ego thing and the money thing, yeah. I mean, you know, not everyone follows suit, but, you know, as long as you know that you are doing the right thing and you're moving accordingly, like, so you can control. You can't control what anybody else does, you know?
Absolutely. And another thing, too, that I try to do, which, you know, a lot of people in the industry in the past got mad at me about, and I just wanted to say this. They got mad. People in the industry got mad at me because of the way that I handled opportunities to give to other artists in this wrestling lane. Once I got to a certain point where I was like the connection, I gave opportunities to a lot of different artists, and I didn't like charge them a whole bunch or did, you know, and they say the games to be sold, not to. I understand all that, but I believe in good karma.
Yeah, me too.
I believe in great opportunities. There's not nobody that I feel like is a threat to what I'm doing because I'm in my own lane. I'm good. So if I say, hey, I don't need to be on this song, this theme song, I can, hey, yo, bro, you want to hop on the hook? You want to do this? You want to do that? Because it's just the right, you got to give back.
Yeah.
You know, people gave to me in this game to be able to be here.
You give good, you get good.
You know? So that was my main imprint on this whole theme song thing. When I got into a position of power, I wanted to make sure that I handled it the right way, that I gave artists opportunities, and that I didn't, there wasn't no horror stories dealing with Monty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I made sure, I always make sure of that. So if you ask anybody that's working, say, you know what? TZ, a good dude, man. He looked out. And I can live with that.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that in any entertainment industry, people always focus on the bad and they always say, like, everyone is fake. And, you know, there is a good portion where people are fake and they're opportunists. But I do think that being a good person still goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it's hard sometimes to stay on that path and be like, I'm not going to do what other people do to me. Like, I'm going to stay the course and be righteous. It's hard, but it's very worth it. Because I can't tell you how many opportunities I've gotten from just people fucking with me, like just having a genuine personality. Like,
talk about it.
You know what I mean? Like, especially when I first went to Indie PR, like after XXL, like I needed some clients and a couple of people came through for me because, you know, I dealt with them at XXL and I was never on some funny shit, right? Like, I was always a genuine person, like never gave anyone bullshit, and it did come back 10 times better. So it's just, it's important to be a good person in general.
That, and it always comes back because, you know, like nobody brings it up. And I do think that in the sense, they always say, like, when you're a good person, you get your roses later. But I always believe that, you know, you should be able to score, but you should be able to pass the ball as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that things move. You know, that's the only way things are ever flowing. There's going to be there's a certain point now. I've made so many theme songs. Everybody in that lane knows me. So I fall to the risk of maybe drowning out my sound Because everybody knows who, oh, here goes another TZ song. You know how that goes. You know, there was a time when, like, and there's still times, still now, where, let me see. There was one wrestling promotion 2 years ago. There was 9 matches. 7 of my songs played that night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 7 songs. So I sat back and I said, okay, I don't want to drown myself so much to where people get tired of me.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, does it get to the point where people are like, nah, everybody using Montese. Like, I'm not going to use Montese. Have you ever experienced that?
Yes, yes. But okay. I was conscious of it, and I didn't take it personal.
Okay.
So what I did
Bingo,
was...
Bingo, there you go.
So what I did was I started building a team of people. So shout out to my bro, Anthony King. I'm working with my bro, Warren Went. I'm working with, you know, Swerve, which is the reason why, the main thing business-wise, why it was important to bring a Swerve up. Because it shows us, hey, I don't have to be in the spotlight all the time.
Right.
I don't have to do that. It's because I'm already dominating. Like, it's almost like Lil Wayne had so many freestyles, so many mixtapes, to where, like, after a while, he's like, damn, like, it's just, this man is everywhere. And then, like you said earlier, the consistency gets used against you. So I said, okay, let me help other people and fall back a bit. And it'll help your legacy.
It'll
help your legacy in the long run, because you're able to say, hey, I have my time in the sun. I know when I pop out. Like now, I'm at the stage of my career where I don't need to be on as many, but when I do, I have an impact. I have a loyal fan base. Now it comes out. I could go through the same thing in the music and in the theme industry that a Drake could go through in the regular hip hop industry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so many themes. So, I mean, like, Bianca, there's so many times I've had, like, people sending me footage, like, 4 of your songs played tonight. And I'm happy for the effort and the hard work, but I'm like, I'm cognizant. I know how the human mind thinks. I'm like, there's going to be a day where I'm going to have to.
But I think that's a good problem to have.
It's a great problem. Don't get me wrong. It's great. I've become very strategic on when I strike. I always say this, and I gave Rashad this nugget, and I learned this from my mentor, rest in peace, Armello Durant. He's a producer for Busta Rhymes. He said, you have to master being a sniper in the industry. Mm. Instead of, everybody wants to be John Wick.
So what's a sniper in the industry?
I'll tell you this. Everybody wants to be John Wick. When it comes to war, everybody just wants to come in, bust down the door with the shotgun and everything. Mm-hmm. And your chances of getting killed is very high. But in the industry, if you learn how to move, and just the sniper in the army is the most dangerous shot, because he'll sit in the same spot in front of that sniper in camouflage and won't move a lick for hours. And then when that person comes out the door, he has that one shot. And that's all he needs. Now, it's hard for people to do that in this industry.
Yeah.
Because everybody just wants to go to shotgun the John Wick way.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification.
Yep.
So I learned with the theme song placements and the way I move in this industry, which has kept me relevant for 11 years, to be able to master that and to master both sides of it. So now I can make a sniper shot and I can only be on 1-2 theme songs a year and have a great impact than still trying to chase 2016 TZ. I don't have to do that no more. Now I can help other artists and then pick my spots when I need to.
That's growth too, right? Growth is learning when to pull back, put other people in position, you know?
That's what it's all about. So that was my lane in my starting and how I'm handling it now being 11 years in. Then when I started the Swerve City podcast and TZ's Table, I said, okay, I have to figure out a way to be seen outside of just this, you know? And I wanted to make sure that if I did this, I wanted to make sure I had a pointed reason. Me and Swerve on our podcast, we had Dominique Wilkins. We've had Michael Cooper, the NBA legend, who just got a jersey retired. Music Soul Child, who we just worked on some songs with. We've had the Who's Who on our podcast, DJ Who Kid. We've had everybody on our podcast. And that was another lane that we needed for the personalities. You know, we started that in 2017.
Okay.
So we built that. So along with the theme songs, I started the podcast, Swerve City Podcast with Swerve, and then TC's Table, which is my branch out. I've had Shane, man, who? I've had so many damn people on there. I forgot his name, the boxer. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. I've had some great...
I'm trying to think about
it. Some great guests. Not Shane Mosley. He just retired, bro. Welterweight. I had him on the show, and I can't believe I'm getting old, bro. My mind just
it starts went, happening in the late 30s.
In the late 30s, but you know, I've had some great guests on the show, and I've been able to, you know, learn. Like, I just had Sarah J on the show, the Adult Entertainer, and that joint is going wild.
That's interesting.
A motivational guy and a porn star having a conversation.
Ooh.
And meeting in the middle.
Very Jerry Springer.
Very interesting conversation. If y'all ain't checked that out, check that out. But it was a very good conversation. One day I'll release the unedited version. I have that version. There's an unedited version. There's like another 20 minutes. Yeah, it was good.
Spicy.
So it was good. But yeah, so I started doing that. So I wanted to branch outside of just the theme songs and mm-hmm. then get into the motivational content, TC's Table, and work with Sean Porter is the boxer. My bad.
There we go.
Sean Porter. Don't kill me, brother. I love you. So I was able to branch that out as well and, mm-hmm. and start doing TC's Table. So it was wrestling, podcasting, motivational content as well. So that was the branch out.
So TC's Table is more motivational.
TC's Table is more motivational. Swerve City Podcast is more wrestling-based, pop culture-based.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And you also release music as an artist, like not just theme song music, like just your own music.
Yes, yes.
So and you've worked with a couple of notable people, so tell us about that.
Yes, so over my career, I have worked with Music Soul Child, who's a mentor of mine. Worked with Mickey Fax. I mean, I've worked with, was able to get a great feature from Ghostface. I was able to work with a lot of notable names in the history. Like, my lineage of being brought up in hip-hop, Charmelo Durant is the producer for Put Your Hands on Mine's Khalifa Busta Rhymes. Mm-hmm. Them two started together. So, obviously, they learned from Chuck D. So, I come from that tree, learning from Charmelo, who put me in the game, learning from him. So, you know, to be able to work with these legends is phenomenal. I'm sitting in the studio. Me and Swerve sitting in the studio, and this is before me and Music shot our music video for a track we did. I'm sitting there watching Music in the studio, and I'm like, I am not as good as I think I am. He's sitting there just pressing buttons, and Music's recording himself. He's like, I got you. He comes up with the harmonies, and he's sitting there pressing buttons. And I'm looking at Swerve, he's looking at me, and I'm like, this is the reason why these guys are there. Because just the way his recording process and how he did it, I'm like, I'm not there yet. I got to work harder. Mm. You know, just that whole process of how he recorded. I watched that distinctively, and I'm like, yeah, it's different. And I don't have a lot of the bad industry stories of meeting my heroes and knowing that they've been good people to me. Mm-hmm. Because Music Soul Child, when people don't know, he keeps a very great mystique about himself, but he's one of the nicest guys in the game.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Love him. Love Music. That is my big bro. And him, Norm, City, shout out to you guys, Mocha. Love y'all, man. Great, great people. So I've learned from him. I've worked with a lot of the who's who lyricists mm-hmm. and stuff in the industry too. So, you know, it's good. And also too, it gives me a chance to work outside of just wrestling theme songs. So I don't kind of get typecasted as just a
right
theme song guy.
Especially in this day and age, you can have more than like one career. So
right. Right. And I think that that's a good thing for me to be able to have that branch out, but to also work with great legends like that. Like we did
it's a
song.
Blessing.
Did a song called Not My Fault with me, Swerve, and Music. We have also too, there was a great situation that came upon me not too long ago. So my new single right now is called Stomp Out with LaRussell. And if anybody knows anything about LaRussell, that man is the biggest independent grinder of in rap. Right now, he's the man. He has come up with so many great concepts for being an independent artist, and you know, for being an artist, how to post content, how to post your brand. Him and the Good Penny Company, they, you know, when I just randomly said, "Yeah, yo, man, I'm gonna reach out and see if I can get this feature." Reach out. And I know that man gets thousands of feature requests. But the fact that he wanted to do that record with me was incredible. You know what I mean? It meant a lot to me, especially with him being where he's at, to show love to another artist, say, yo, I'm a lookout. It's phenomenal. So make sure you guys check out that record, Stomp Out. It is doing great.
It's out now,
It's out now.
Yes.
Make sure you guys show love.
Apple, Spotify,
music video coming out soon.
Okay, good.
So it's phenomenal, man. Phenomenal. Stomp Out is one of my favorite records I've ever done.
Yeah, why is that?
Because it was the most carefree I've ever been in the studio.
Okay.
Most carefree. A lot of times as artists, we kind of overthink the process. We kind of overthink it. And it's like, oh, I don't want it to sound too much like this, too much like that. I just randomly went in the studio and just did what I felt.
What made you gain that confidence? Because I feel like it's confidence too when you don't overthink, right? It's like, you know you got it. Like, but what made you feel that way? Like, was there something specifically that happened? Or was it just you, the years that you've been doing this, you're at a point where you just feel confident now?
Yeah, I think as artists sometimes we can kind of tend to overthink. I think it's a process that can happen. And I think good collaborators can do that as well. Be working with good collaborators can keep you motivated. But for the first time in my career, I felt like I didn't have anything to prove. But I just had to prove it to myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to make a song that for this audience or for that audience. Stomp Out is a record that I just wanted to make for myself. Mm-hmm. And Talib Kweli had a great quote. He said, once I started making music for me, and I wasn't really making music for anybody else, my music came out better. And I said, okay, I'm just gonna listen to this beat. Shout out to Kofi Cooks on the production. And it just started coming to me, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna reach out to LaRussell and see if I can get him on the record. And he did it. And it's, like I said, it's one of the best records I've ever made in my long tenured career, and I'm really, really happy about that. And I'm gonna be releasing my It Is What It Is project here in June on my birthday. Okay. I always try to release an EP around my birthday time.
When's your birthday?
June 23rd. I'm a Cancer.
Oh, I love Cancer.
Yeah, I'm a Cancer Cancer man. So with a lot of therapy.
I see.
with a lot of therapy. So
crazy. You said with a lot of therapy.
With a lot of therapy. It took a lot of self work to be this calm as a Cancer man.
Hey, listen, people don't talk about that enough. The work, like, I've been doing some work on myself too. Like, people don't talk about that enough.
I know. It's and I think especially for what we do, because this is not like a 9-to-5 job where you can go clock in, stock groceries from 6 to 2, and 2 o'clock, you know what you're doing. 6 o'clock, you come in, you know where you know what truck is, you know where your aisle's at, you're stocking cereal and you're gone.
Right, right.
This is an industry where you gotta constantly be moving.
Yeah, that's true.
You gotta constantly be moving. So when I put that together, I said, you know what? This song is going to be everything that I wanted it to be. I'm going to be carefree. I'm not going to overthink it. I'm not going to sit in front of the laptop and overstress it. And it's been one of my most successful debuting records I've ever had.
Interesting. And you know, it's funny. It's you're different than a typical artist. Now that you said that, because a typical artist is making music. So what I'm saying is, so you're different than a typical artist, right? Because a typical artist, you know, when they start out making music, it's really for themselves, right? It's just they happen to gain a fan base off of what they like to do. Mm-hmm. You, for your career, have always made music for other people, what you think they want, because it's like a service that you've provided. So I think it's great that now you saying that, you doing music for you, is just like, you know what you like, and you hope that other people will like it, but at this point in your career, you just feel like, I need to do something for me. Mm-hmm. Because you've been doing stuff for other people for so long, you know?
Yeah, and that's the great feeling I had. I threw an album release party for the first time, and I never celebrated myself like that. Okay. Last year in Orlando, Florida, I threw a private party.
Okay.
And the group of people that came out, it was very emotional for me that night because of a lot of celebrations. I went through some health concerns that I was recovering from. Mm. And it meant a lot to me to celebrate that. But also, too, to kind of see who's going to come out for me outside of just the wrestling stuff. Mm-hmm. This is my most personal album, Erica's Son 2, my most personal project. Let me see who comes out. And it was phenomenal just to show to say, hey, this is what I could do outside of just wrestling and that lane. So it's phenomenal to be able to have people that like to hear both sides. That I can go into the wrestling world or the theme song world when I want to, but yeah. Also when it's time for me to make music that I want to make for my spirit, they gravitate to that too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a blessing. Because not everyone can pivot to different lanes in their career. And people accept that. Like we've seen, especially celebrities, they pivot, especially back in the days when I feel like rappers would act, it like wouldn't really hit the same, and vice versa, where actors would rap, it wouldn't hit the same. So it's hard to pivot and get that same love. So when you're able to do that, it's like an extra blessing.
Yeah, I always said like LL Cool J took the shots that we're all doing now anyway. He took the bullets for what everybody's doing now anyway.
You think so?
Yeah. I think LL's the standard for what everybody's doing now anyway.
Explain, like, why do you feel
like
that
he was the actor. He was the first, he was the female interest. He made the love songs.
Right.
He didn't leave rap, but he went to another lane. He took criticism for that.
Yeah, he did.
And he stayed in hip hop. He was the first real big solo rap star. You know what I mean? As far as hip hop at that, you had like...
You think Curtis, he was the first solo?
As far as like, you had like, maybe like a Curtis Blow, but like in like the early, like the heartthrob.
Like to be, like maybe. Star,
and he was a kid.
Maybe, you might have a point. Well, no, he wasn't a kid. He was grown up by then.
What, 16, 15?
No, as far, he wasn't that, I'm talking about at his height.
Oh, I'm talking about like when he started, like just him being like the prototype.
No, yeah, he was a heartthrob, yeah, at 16. But as far as him being the first big solo rapper, I don't know, we have to fact check that.
I don't think, who would, maybe Curtis Blow before him?
No, there had to be someone else. And we're talking late 80s, right?
Early, LL Cool J is what, 85?
Is he? You might. You know what? We're gonna fact check this and talk about this on another episode.
Yeah,
we're gonna,
I think LL was
the
first.
You might be right.
I think he's the first solo, because it was Run DMC and him.
You know what? This is going to be a subject matter for my next guest, because I'm going to do some research. And if you are correct, I'm going to shout you out. That is a very good topic. Sorry.
Yeah. I think LL took the shots. And the brunt of the hits for what all the artists are doing now, going into movies,
okay,
doing different things. Nobody was doing that before him.
You might be right. Yeah. You might be right.
I think he's the blueprint for what everybody's doing now. And he deserves more roses for that.
And we were talking about him not so long ago. We were saying that he doesn't get his flowers enough.
Like, he doesn't.
You know, I mean, I think right now he's starting to, but it was a long time coming. It, you know, people do overlook LL and his accomplishments. Yeah. And, you know,
yeah, look at what he's done. First, he was the young teenage star before Bow Wow, before all that. He was the young teenage star. He became a grown man. By the time he became, quotation, old to a lot of the fans, he wasn't even 30 yet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like when Mr. Smith came out in 95, he was considered old by then. And he wasn't even 30.
I'm not gonna say old. I will say mature.
Okay. So I raise your debate point, and I say that he already had a 10-year career by then.
He did. So he was definitely seasoned.
He was seasoned. So he wasn't the new car smell anymore, as I like to say. So
yeah.
You had he collabed with Big. He Foxy Brown, Keith Murray, Remix.
Yeah.
Put a lot of people on, and DMX, 4-3-2-1. He did a lot for people.
Yeah, he did. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say for people.
People, but
with people, with though, people, for
and,
sure.
And gave them a lot of looks. I wouldn't say for them, but in the sense of him being able to share, he did a lot. So
for sure, he did.
I do think that, you know.
And I heard he's a dope person in real life. Like, he's, like, not arrogant. Like, he's, like, real chill.
Word, so. Man. I would love to meet Mr. James Todd Smith someday. But, I think that he's the blueprint of what all this is. So that's a fact, and he deserves his roses for that.
He does.
All the artists are doing that now.
Yeah, I like to see that. I think a lot of the legacy artists are finally getting their just due, so it's refreshing.
Absolutely.
All right, so you have, what do you have coming up? The Lil Russell song is out now, but you have a video coming soon.
Yes, so here's my Rolodex of what's going on.
Let's go.
Busy and everything that's going on. So I'm gonna start from wrestling, I'm gonna go to motivation, and then I'm gonna go to my music stuff outside of that with the podcast stuff. So wrestling-wise, I am working on a couple EPs with a couple artists that I'm bringing up.
Okay.
You know, that I'm working with as far as AEW, who I work with.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, wrestling songs that I'm in there cooking up with a lot of people, kind of executive producing it more mm-hmm. than rapping myself. So there's
congratulations.
Thank you. So there's that side. I get in my executive bag and help, you know, facilitate, you know, John Stockton lobs. I get to do that side. So that's what I'm working on that side. My own personal project, like I said, it is what it is, will be out June 23rd.
Okay.
With Lil Russell on the project. I have a song with Smoke Dizza on the project that's going to be out there. Music Soul Child as his alter ego, The Hustle. We have a song on there called Bring the Pain, which is dope. And kind of wrestling related, bringing him into that world. So
oh, that's cool.
That's dope. That's going to be on the EP as well. So I got my boy, me and my man John Connor are going to start working on our album called War 2, which is called Wrestling Ambition and Respect. So we're going to work on that album. We dropped our first one.
Okay.
We dropped our first one 2 years ago, so make sure you guys check out War 1. We're going to work on War 2 here soon. And as far as Teezy's Table, my next guest, I will announce it on here. My next guest is former NFL player Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. He played for multiple teams, including the Giants here. So former cornerback in the NFL, got him. And he'll be the next person on Teezy's Table. So, yeah, I'm busy. I'm working. Hopefully I can get you. I can bring the wonderful Bianca down to Florida and you come sit on my couch.
I would love
next
to.
Time. You know what I mean? Get more, you know?
This is not the J-Lo glow that I'm known for having, so I need some sun. So
absolutely.
Once I make it over, I will let you know.
Absolutely. Would love to have you on the platform, and you know, that's me. I'm busy. And like I said, the Rashad Evans theme song, okay. Produced by Immortal Girlfriend. Shout out to those guys. Phenomenal synth band. That will be the official song.
Okay.
Called We Rollin'. It'll be the official theme song for Rashad Evans when he wrestles and fights Rampage Jackson and coming out later this year.
And pay-per-view in April, right?
Pay-per-view.
Let's
it's
go.
Pay-per-view. So I'll be live on pay-per-view. Make sure you guys buy that, support it, and show love. You know, get my little camera mix
walking
in.
Walking Rashad Evans out, right?
Walking him to the ring. You know what I mean? So I get my just doing roses that I worked hard for. So
really quickly, you said something about Music Soul Child's alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure a lot of us don't know that he has an alter ego. So what is it?
Great. So I will say this.
Who is his other personality?
Music Soul Child has many personalities.
Okay.
Purple Wonderlove, The Hustle, Music Soul Child, and he has many different personalities.
So who is The Hustle? Because that's
the
who
Hustle
you
is the hard, like the street, more aggressive version of his personality. We have
Music Soul Child aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. You should hear the stuff that we got together.
What?
You should hear some of the stuff we got. We got a dope song called Pressure out right now. We shot a music video for.
Is he singing or rapping?
He's both. And he uses an auto-tune. He uses a monotone effect on his voice.
Did you know that he raps? Music Soul Child raps?
Phenomenal, too. Fire.
Okay.
Fire.
We're going to have to look for that. Okay.
Yeah.
No
so
idea.
He has multiple personalities. And he's kind of like, it's like how Prince had multiple personalities.
Yeah? As an artist. As an artist.
As an
nothing
artist.
To be concerned
right.
about.
Right, as an artist. So You know, he has those different branches. And if you hear the music, he's so ahead of his time with his talent. So when we linked up and we did the wrestling record Pressure, shout out to Marina Shafir from AEW, who's in the music video as well. It was a lot of fun. It's fun for him because he gets to express himself outside of just being music.
That's dope. Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, so all make sure you guys check that out. Monteezy featuring The Hustle, Pressure on all streaming platforms. Go stream the video. I had a great time with the legend coming to do the video with me. It was a lot of fun. So make sure you guys check out The Hustle, man. The dude is, we working on it. We cooking. That's all I'm going to say.
I see, chef. Well, thank you for pulling up.
Thank you for bringing me here. I am subscribed to the channel.
I love to hear
that. You
know
what I mean? Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe, because I'm going to say it. And show love to the wonderful Bianca. This is a legend right here.
Oh, thank you.
She's phenomenal. And y'all, hit her up, man. Hit her up. She is the greatest. She is dope at what she's doing.
Thank you.
I am honored to be here. And hopefully you come back someday and shoot the breeze again.
Yeah, we're here. You know where we are.
Absolutely. I thank you.
No problem. Bye, everyone.